Hello, seafood friends. You're listening to Catch the Current Boston Style. I'm Amanda Buckle, and I'm in the Wavemaker Zone at Seafood Expo North America with Marcus Scheer, CEO of Seagrove, and Eric O'Brien, the founder of Kodiak Ocean Bounty. And we're here to talk about Alaska oysters, which I've already learned a lot about just hanging around your tasting here. I had no idea that Pacific oysters were not native to Alaska. I just learned about that. Tell me about Seagrove. Tell me about Kodiak Ocean Bounty. Tell me everything. So who wants to start?
Well, first,
Marcos.
The first oyster farms went in south of Ketchikan in 1910. So we've been farming on and off in Alaska since 1910. That farm operated south of Ketchikan for about 50 years into the mid-60s. Wasn't tremendously successful, I think, but it was Pacific oysters that were brought in. Yeah, and so and then there was a lag of about 35 years between then and then. In 1988, the state passed the Leasing Act, which set up the structure that we all operate under now. So that's really why you started in the late 80s. You saw that activity start to really pick up, is because the other activity was pre-statehood.
Okay.
Which is, you know, so it had different set of rules, and so it took them that long to put in a new set of rules so that we could have this aquatic farming activity in Alaska.
That is wild.
So there it is.
Yeah,
so
well, a lot of work went into that. Yeah.
One more caveat on that, kind of the neat history, you know. It's the only species of all of Alaska's biology that you can import into the state. Our state is very careful about importing a foreign body. Mm-hmm. And oysters are the only one, because for one, they existed for a long time.
They grandfathered in because they'd been in the state being cultivated pre-statehood. So that was where it started.
So oysters preceded our state. We became a state in 1959, and we had oysters. I didn't think it was 1910. I thought it was 1940 with the military. But it preceded statehood. That's the consistent story.
Wow.
And so it's the only species that you could bring in. And also, one of the stories that I love to tell about oysters is the byproduct is, you know, the byproducts of some species, oil is an externality you got to be careful of. The byproducts of oysters is primarily a good environment. It has good habitat, cleans water, it produces symbiosis for the other species. So anyways, the only species you can bring into Alaska, it's kind of a neat story.
Yeah, and it helps with the commercial fishing, right? So it's cleaning up the waters. Obviously, Alaska relies so much on commercial fishing. And when you think about aquaculture, there's a lot of controversy that sometimes commercial fishermen are anti-aquaculture. And do you have a good relationship with other commercial fishermen? Are you also commercial fishermen?
So in Alaska, our commercial fishery is older and it's maturing. And as an industry matures, you see consolidation and the boom days are over. And so it's a maturing industry that's not thriving like it was in its early days. So commercial fishermen are largely looking for outlets and other ways to live on the water and continue to make money. So generally, and not 100%, but I would say the vast majority of commercial fishermen and communities and processors and industry support really are excited about mariculture. We've even had some of the biggest seafood companies in the country buy into the seafood industry. Now, they haven't stayed in, they haven't committed yet. It's a little early days, mm-hmm. but in general, to answer your question, commercial seafood and farming goes very, very well in Alaska. Symbiotic, very shared skills, very shared people, very shared capital. I started in economic development. I fell into mariculture. Mm-hmm. And so it's in ways of diversifying and strengthening our communities.
Mm-hmm. My history in seafood, I started in the seafood industry in 1985, working in processing when I was 16 years old. And I spent about a dozen years as I went through college and after college. And then I worked for the same company out of Ketchikan. And then in the late 90s, I decided I went to law school. And after I got out, I practiced law in the industry up and down the West Coast from California to the Bering Sea in the seafood industry for a couple of decades. And I became involved in mariculture through the commercial seafood industry as part of the Alaska Fishery Development Foundation, which I've been on the board and I'm currently the president I've been on the board there for almost 20 years. And the Alaska Fishery Development Foundation, almost 15 years ago, we were looking at what the next opportunity was for Alaska and how to develop that. There were existing shellfish farms there, but they mostly were owner-operated, smaller-scale regional farms that sold into their communities. There wasn't an export market of any real consequence.
Okay.
So we got together and we did this whole strategic planning thing, and we kept coming back to mariculture as that diversification opportunity for the Alaska seafood industry. And we started in 2013, we started what was called the Alaska Mariculture Initiative. And that AFDF initiative then became, under then Governor Walker, was the Alaska Mariculture Task Force, which was a stakeholder and government group that got together to develop a mariculture development plan. And that development plan was completed in 2018 and updated. And that became in the foundation of the next iteration of that, which is the Alaska Mariculture Cluster applied for a Build Back Better Challenge grant in 2021.
Okay.
And that grant project was one of only 16 projects awarded in the country in 21, awarded a $50 million catalyst grant and seven different projects to help the industry grow.
Okay.
So the seafood industry has been, you know, really motivated to helping this be successful. Most of the participants, a lot of the people that work for me, are former fishermen or fishermen in the summer.
Okay.
It's the same equipment, the same boat, same skill set. And one of the reasons we thought it was such a natural transition is we have, Alaska has 35,000 miles of coastline. It has 250 permitted processing plants, 5,000 fishing vessels, and all of this population that knows how to work on the water. So adding another skill to that, adding another fishery, another opportunity was something that we thought was just, you know, it was a no-brainer, frankly. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't we be doing this in a material way? To get it from, you know, from that catalyzing phase, from the boutique farmer to something that, you know, we're really starting to see take shape in Alaska now has been a really great adventure.
Yeah, and it seems like it's evolving. Has your supply grown that, you know, that you're supplying now, you know, beyond in the lower 48? Are you primarily in Alaska? Where are these oysters heading?
So I guess I'll speak to that first. And so I'm in a remote site and I am not exporting, right? And I've learned a lot about why. And I had a spreadsheet from the very beginning that showed me exporting in vast scales at this point. But the reality and the plan are not the same thing. So that's sort of a snapshot of where our whole state is. We need to build these things. We need to build good foundations. And for me, a challenge was around the small oysters and the seed. So Alaska in general needs our seed supply. If you're going to be a farmer, you need to control the seed that puts your product in the water, in your deployment, and leads to what will ultimately be exported and sailed. So I am not there because we need to develop some seed infrastructure.
You know, for us, you know, to go to the export market, we scaled our operations specifically to be able to access export markets as well. We have two farms. We have about 300 acres of operating leasehold. We do seaweed and shellfish farming. So, and so we're built to export as well. And that's one of the reasons we're here at the Boston show, is to create relationships. We've got capacity and market and scalability to be able to export some material volume.
Talking about having the availability of oysters, one of the things that Undercurrent has been reporting on has been just between MSX, the illness to hit PEI, Vibrio, norovirus. I mean, right now with PEI, the MSX has really knocked out a lot of their oysters. Is there an opportunity for Alaska here?
I think there's certainly an opportunity. And, you know, and the eastern oyster is very different from us, both on price point but and total supply.
Okay.
But, you know, I think there is an opportunity. Fortunately, that MSX hasn't affected any of the regions where we are. We, you know, there are two forms of Vibrio. There's a much more virulent form, which has not progressed to Alaska yet. So that's great. You know, so we are looking at that as a really viable alternative. And also because our water temperatures are lower, we don't get spawny in the summer, because one of the reasons that we can grow oysters in Alaska, even though it's not an indigenous species, is because they don't reproduce in Alaska's waters. It's too cold.
Oh, okay.
So that's one of the reasons why we can do that. And it's also an opportunity for us, right? You know, in all these other regions, particularly on the West Coast, where you get spawning in the summer, you know, we could fill that market niche and that market opportunity. We've stocked up to be able to do that. And I think it's an opportunity that our hope is, as we go out and develop markets for Alaska oysters and other regions, you know, we'd like to be in 30 states this year. So if we do that, that means there's familiarity of Alaska shellfish in these regions, which hopefully provides an opportunity for other growth.
I think Alaska's position in this thing, right? So it's a colder state. It's a little bit harder to grow. We've also got some benefits. We don't have the Vibrio in presence. You know, Vibrio's coming on in about 70-degree water. We don't have any water in the state that gets 70 degrees right now. And then, you know, the major growing production reasons, Pacific Northwest, was that the MSX? That was the big... But it wiped out a bunch of supply in Washington. In the Gulf of Mexico, they've had some dead zones. And then there's been hurricanes on the other regions. That's not to say Alaska's not going to have our own issues at some point. But there has been a huge reduction in supply in the nationwide production of oysters and shellfish. In Alaska, because of our colder waters, it looks like we've been sort of insulated from some of those events. So it's a good growth opportunity. The U.S. is going to need more shellfish. And Alaska has an abundant water, rich resources, rich water. And if we can grow these foundations and our seed supply, and our hatcheries, and our equipment, and our gear, and then our businesses that are positioned for export, we should be able to fill a niche if other regions of the country experience supply shock. And also, to my understanding, sales of oysters go down substantially in the summer because water temperatures get so high and there's these Vibrio and these other opportunities, so the supply of oysters goes down. It could be a prime opportunity for Alaska to be one of the main players in the country to provide fresh oysters in that hottest summer periods.
Well, I'm a huge oyster fan. I very much enjoy trying Alaska oysters. It's my first time, so.
Did you like them?
I loved them. I was telling Tessa here, it's a very, I'm from New Jersey, and we get a lot of Virginia oysters, and they're fantastic, but it was a completely different taste, and like it was
the
just.
Experience.
Yes, right? It was just, yeah. And it was delicious. And I thank you for sharing this experience. Thank you for sharing your knowledge. And yeah, I can't wait to learn more and hear more about Alaska oysters.